Good morning, Elliot Friedman. How are you?
I'm good, Dean Mulberg. How are you?
We're good. It's Friday. It's the long weekend. The hockey has been great.
Yes.
We'll talk about the game tonight. We've seen this throughout this playoff. I don't know if it's always like this, but the inability to kind of harness momentum, or at least for us to recognize momentum when it's harnessed, from one game to the next, it does not seem to matter. And I wonder about you guys. It's less about prognostication and figuring out what's going to happen. It's just assessing it after it happens because it's too unpredictable.
Yeah, you know, it's really interesting. Like in that Winnipeg-Nashville series, every time, you know, somebody won a game and you thought, oh, okay, they've got it, they never held it. And I remember years ago, the first Stanley Cup I did for Hockey Night in Canada was actually the one in Calgary, Calgary-Tampa. But in the Eastern Conference Final, Tampa played Philadelphia. And that was one of those series, too, where it went seven games and you thought, okay, one team's got it now. And they never could hold it. And John Tortorella, who was coaching the Lightning then, went on this rant about how there's no such thing as momentum in the playoffs. And good teams can lose a game, break it down, figure out what happened, and move on and fix the problem. And, you know, I believe that. I mean, guys, you watch this league as much as anyone else. There's so much parity. These teams are so close. When you play a seven-game series against each other, the coaches now, they're so good with video and they can break you down and find a weakness. I mean, you look at the home records. Home teams are, what, 34 and 39 in the playoffs? They've only had a winning record in the first round, and that was, I think, one game over 500. I think they were 22 and 21. You know, I just think in this league now, if you're not up to playing every shift, if you're not at your best every second you're on the ice, somebody's going to take advantage of you.
And mistakes. You can't make one. Seems like almost every mistake made in your net.
Well, that's what's happening to Winnipeg for sure. Like, you look at Vegas in this series, they make a mistake early in that game, and Vegas scores. You know, they tie the game, the Jets do, and 12 seconds later, there's a miscommunication with Hellebuck, and they score. Like, Vegas is absolutely that team. If you make a mistake against them, they burn you, and their percentage of burning your mistakes is very high.
It's overly dramatic, but watching Vegas right now, you just get the feeling like that is the team of destiny. The goalposts and the chances that Fleury has been able to get in the Sharks series and now again, I mean, call it luck, call it whatever, but it just feels like there's something going on with the Golden Knights and the luck that they're getting.
You know, absolutely. I mean, we've joked about, I mean, you know, they had that quote this year from Doughty where he said, no way by the end of the year this team is still better than we are. Like, Vegas is still using that as part of their pregame show. Like, they put it on the ice.
Yeah, I saw it. It was beamed onto the ice the other night.
So, like, you know, so we've been, I mean, people much smarter than we are have been sitting here all year saying that this bubble was going to burst and there's no way it's going to last. And here they are. They're six wins from a Stanley Cup championship. You know, it's amazing. It's an unbelievable story.
It's Pinder's point. Pinder's not here today, but he brought it up the other day that all the love that there is for Fleury because he has been tremendous.
Yeah.
We're quick to forget a little bit that he was a bit of a wild card when it came to putting him in the playoffs because he's had some really subpar performances to the point that, you know, maybe 5 years ago, you were a little worried with him in the net.
Well, I remember they win the Cup in 2009, and then they don't win again until 2016. And all those guys were getting it. Like, Fleury, he's not that good. You know, Crosby went through some terrible injuries, but he's overrated. Malkin, they got to trade him. All those guys went through it. Like, they were all questioned. They were all doubted. And now nobody doubts them anymore. You know, Fleury had an interesting comment after the game the other night, which said, you know, it's nice to be in an organization. I don't know if it's an organization, but I haven't always been believed in. And, you know, one of the most interesting interviews I've done, and I went back and I've watched it a couple of times, was when they beat San Jose to win the Stanley Cup in 2016, I interviewed Fleury on the ice. And I thought he would, you know, take it like I was throwing him like total softballs, as you often do in that situation. We were just like, what a great guy you are. You were so supportive of Murray. And he just wouldn't bite. You know, he didn't give me much. Like, he did the interview because he's flurried, he's a decent guy, but, you know, I think sometimes we forget, and Rhett, you know, obviously you played, so you remember this. These guys are super competitive, and even though he's happy they won the Stanley Cup, he treated Murray great, he was an all-class teammate, inside, it is tearing his heart out that he's not the starter. And last year, he takes them to the Eastern Conference Final, because Murray gets hurt, and he takes them to the Eastern Conference Final. There's no way they win the Cup without him. But the first chance that Mike Sullivan gets to put Murray back in, he takes it, and Murray doesn't give up the net. And I remember talking to Kelly Rudy about that. I was like, are you surprised that you know, Murray's taking it and running with it, and he's going to be the guy? And Kelly said, no, I'm not surprised. And I said, why not? And he goes, because Mike Sullivan won a Stanley Cup with that guy, so he's going to be loyal to that guy. And you know what? I think sometimes we confuse niceness for weakness. And just because you're a nice guy doesn't mean you're a weak guy. And I think that Fleury has kind of reminded all of us about that.
I remember that last year, and I said, I was shocked. I was like, these guys love Fleury. He's playing well. How are you going to switch him out? And then he did. I mean, they go on to win, so it's all forgotten. But
and the first opportunity he had, Reddy.
Yeah.
Did. Yeah,
it wasn't like Fleury even slipped up, really. Like, no.
Nope. The other guy just got in, and he played really well, and it was his net.
And it did not feel at any point when you knew Fleury was going to Vegas that you were giving up a Hart Trophy kind of guy,
no.
Right?
No. There's nobody. And again, I think that, you know, the thing that really is good about it, Dean, is that, you know, the other night you see those pictures of the Hogan family from Humboldt. He's still in his pads, and he's sitting there, he's talking with them in the room, and then he's playing, air hockey or whatever he's playing with them. Like, it just shows that, you know, on the ice, you can be a killer. You can be someone who will rip your heart out of it, stomp on it, and gladly beat you. But off the ice, you can still be a really decent person. Like, one thing I've learned over the years is that most athletes are really good people when it comes to that. They're happy to be friendly. They're happy to share their insight. They're happy to really help out and be good to those who are less fortunate than they are. But it doesn't mean that when the puck drops or the first pitch is thrown that you can't say, okay, you're between me and victory. I'm going to rip your heart out and stomp on it.
Not the same point, but somewhat in that line of, you know, I want to rip your heart out. Jonathan Marchessault, wants the puck, he wants to score, and he wants to bury you. And he has been doing that. I guess, is there anything that we may not know about what happened in Florida and why they were not at all worried about giving him up?
Well, I think they were worried about it, but I think there was a couple of things there. Number one, things went really badly last year between Riley Smith and the Panthers. And it wasn't just, it wasn't just one person. Like, I think both coaches at times were kind of frustrated with him. They had a game late in the year when they were still trying to make the playoffs against Dallas, and they lost that game 2-1. And Tom Rowe, who was coaching the Panthers at the time, he called out Riley Smith on both those goals. And if you go back and watch that game, and we showed them earlier this year in one of the playoff series, if you go back and you watch that game, you can see that Riley Smith completely falls asleep on defensive coverage. So for whatever reason, it didn't work well between him and them last year. I believe that first and foremost that Dale Talon was ordered to cut the payroll. Like, we have to cut the payroll this year. And as a result, I don't think they were in a position where they could really re-sign Marchessault eventually. And they decided they had to get rid of a salary off there. And because of the year Smith had last year, he was going to be the guy. And that's why it happened. Like, I know everybody's pulling out an article from a few months ago where he says defense wins championships, and that's why I protected Petrovic. I think that's all doublespeak. I think Talon's protecting his owner. And the owner said, we're going to cut salary, and that was the best way to do it. Now, it's blown up in Florida's face. Like, that's two-thirds of their number one line, and both those guys are playing great. But Smith just had a difficult year at the wrong time when Florida had to cut salary, and as a result, they lost both those guys. But, you know, what can you say about him? It's interesting. I had a long talk with a scout who scouts the Quebec League, And I said, you know, what happened with him out there? And he said, you know, honestly, he's an outlier. There's not a lot of kids who at his size and what he did at his age, because he really had his best scoring years, I think, when he was older. There's not a lot of kids who will blow up to this level, that will do what Marchessault did. And he said, good for him, because we all missed it. But it's one of those things where if you were drafting and you looked at Marchessault's production and what age his production came and his size, he said there's not a lot of teams that would have taken him. And even a team like Tampa, which is the one of the few teams in the league that is really not prejudiced against size, like they draft small players all the time, they had a chance to keep Marchessault and pass on him. So that tells you, you know, how many people really missed this.
Elliot Friedman, of course, our guest here on Boomer and Warner in the Morning. The Winnipeg Jets need someone other than Scheifele to start scoring some goals. Ehlers is not in the lineup and wasn't scoring when he was.
And
it's been tough for Line A to get back to the pace that he was at during the regular season. Just thoughts on either of those two or where they are going to get that scoring?
Well, I mean, they need to find it. I agree with you. That first line, you know, Wheeler, Connor, and Scheifele is carrying the mail. And the difference right now in that last game was, you know, Vegas' second line, Neil Hall and Tuck, they were really good and they were scoring. And the second line that Winnipeg has, with especially with Ehlers out, you know, Tanev, Line A, and Stastny, they aren't. And, you know, the thing there is that Ehlers may not have been scoring, but he's creative. He creates opportunities. Because at least, even if he doesn't score, he's so dangerous that you have to watch out for him. And he opens up ice because of how dangerous he is. I do agree with you. That those deep lines for Winnipeg, they have to score. I think, you know, I was talking to a coach yesterday, and he said that one of the biggest problems Winnipeg is going to have now is that they're giving up a lot of goals in this series when they turn over the puck at the blue line. And Winnipeg is a team that is very aggressive. Like, they like to pinch their D. They like to really come at you. And he said that's who they are, and that's why they're that good, because they do that, and they do that well, and they're fearless about it. But it started to burn them. Like, Braden McNabb made a hell of a play on Scheifele the other night, and that led to the first goal. He said they're just going to have no choice but to be aggressive and hope the floodgates open. I do wonder, like, Maurice had a good one yesterday. He said, we'll know at the morning skate today if Ehlers is going to play, and they're not having a morning skate because the game starts 5 o'clock at Vegas time. So I wonder if they put Perreault up, if he's not playing, if Perreault goes with Stastny and Lyon to give them some offense. But you're right. Like, those guys got to score, because they're not going to win if those guys don't start scoring.
All right.
Elliot, a thought on Connor Hellebuyck and all the criticism for playing the puck. I don't know if he, you know, changes and doesn't leave his net ever, but I wonder how much that'll weigh on him mentally as he enters this game tonight.
Well, I think the thing with Hellebuyck is I'm wondering if he's starting to tire. And not just physically, but mentally. Like, this is as long a stretch of his career. And, you know, I think he's played great. Like, don't get me wrong. I'm not criticizing him. But I do wonder if we're getting to the point where he's starting to wear down physically and mentally. And we have seen signs of that. And, you know, this is where I think the experience, not only has Fleury been unbelievable, he's just not giving up on pucks, but Fleury's been here before, and Hellebuyck has. I don't like to say bring it up like, oh, he's inexperienced, because I think he's proven the experience doesn't really matter. He's a good goalie. I just think now it's the physical experience of this. You know, he's 15 games in. He's never done anything like this. The intensity of it is so great. I just wonder if the biggest problem with Hellebuyck is he's just wearing down physically and mentally. And, you know, what do you do? I mean, we saw a game a few years ago, 2011, where Dwayne Roloson took Tampa to Game 7 Eastern Conference Final. He was 40 years old at the time, and they played Matthew Garand for one game in the Eastern Final against Boston just because they thought Roloson was exhausted. And the strategy actually worked. He came back and he played great. I don't think you can do that right now if you're Winnipeg. But I think if you're the Jets, you're looking at Hellebuyck right now and you're saying, boy, I hope he's not worn out.
You talk about tired young goaltenders. Vasilevskiy admitted that to the media late in the season, but yet here he is in games 3 and 4, and he was unbelievable last night in game 4 to tie that series. And if you're Washington, we talked off the top of this interview about adjustments, but if you're the Capitals, it's not like you have to change much. You're playing good hockey, but you're facing a really hot goaltender right now.
Yes, you are. The one thing you got to do is, like, Lars Eller, what does he have, like 7 penalties in the last 2 games?
Yeah, 5 like, minors.
Yeah, you got to stop that. Like, Tampa is, you know, they entered last night 5 for 12 on the power play. They scored on the first one, and the winning goal by Killorn was 5 seconds after Eller penalty ended. And he is, you'll see, like, he's trying to get back into the play, and he can't get there, and that's one of the reasons that Killorn scores. Like, if I'm Washington, the only thing I'm worried about is, you know, that we're being undisciplined and we're giving Tampa Bay opportunities to score. I think that's the one thing I change. You know, as you talked about Vasilevsky, and he admitted he was tired. I actually talked with someone the other day, and they were saying, like, if you look at what's happening in baseball now, starting pitchers, like, they don't pitch anymore. Like, we had a game last week where DeGrom, who's a starter for the Mets, he's coming off an arm injury. He throws 45 pitches in the first inning. He walks the bases low. He doesn't give up a hit or a run, and they take him out. And, you know, if you look at what's happening in baseball now, starting pitchers, they don't get 3 times through the order. Like, they get their second time, and then you go to your bullpen, and that's it. And he wondered if we're going to get to that point in hockey where I don't think you pull goalies in the middle of games, but you start having minutes limits on goaltenders, because he thinks it affected Rene in the last series, and he's seeing it happening to Hellebuck in this series. And I don't know how you do that, because, you know, goaltending is such an important position. But he said that he's a guy who's done some, he says, going to start looking into it more about crunching numbers and seeing if there's different fatigue points. But he's wondering if the whole thing with starting pitching in baseball is going to manifest itself at some point with goaltenders in hockey, like minutes limits. And, God, I hope not, but I can see it happening.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Hey, you know what? I wanted to ask you, before we let you go, Don Waddell with some interesting comments in Carolina, basically saying that, aside from one player, pretty much anybody's available. And that's probably overstating it, but they are open for business in Carolina, and how do you have any idea what that even means with what they've done here in the last month?
Well, I think it's actually 2. I think that Aho is not going anywhere, and their number one pick from last year's draft, Martin Necas, is played very well for the Czech Republic at the Worlds. I think he's another guy, because I believe teams asked, is that guy available? And I think Carolina said, no way. So I think it's 2 guys. But, look, I just think it's Carolina's way of telling people they're open for business. And, you know, I do think Skinner is going to get dealt. I think there's a lot of interest in him. And I've also heard that Carolina is willing to keep money on him if it's going to make the deal even better. So I do think that, you know, there's a lot of interest in Skinner. You know, the one that's interesting for me is Hanifin. I reported during the year that they were listening on him. And, you know, obviously nothing happened. You know, he's an interesting one for me, because I do think there'd be a lot of interest. I think the price would be very high. You know, people take that to mean that all these guys are getting traded. You know, you simply don't trade all of those guys. But I think it's Carolina's way of saying, give us a call. We want to hear what you got to say. And I think the key thing is the Hurricanes are, like, especially in Skinner's case, they'll keep money if it makes the deal better, which says to me they're willing to consider a lot of things.
Anything else, Retro?
No, we better let him go.
Rhett's done busy. For the...
Yeah, I'll see you in September, Elliot.
Is this it?
That's it, baby.
Oh, my God, Warner. You've got the best agent ever.
I can work for you if you need some help, advice, just call.
Yeah, or the weakest PD to deal with. One or the other. Not sure which one it is.
It's a good combination.
Yeah, it is. Hey, buddy.
If you're talented, it's a good combination. Yeah. Have a great summer, Rhett. Enjoy, all right?
Thanks, you too.
Talk to you next week.
I'll speak to you next week, Dino.
You betcha.